Hey there, and welcome to today's episode of Social Media Moneymakers, part of the Stan family of podcasts. And today, I'm really excited to get to talk about something that we've really just been scratching the surface of with our first 9 episodes, which, by the way, if you haven't listened to any of our previous 9 episodes, I highly recommend you do, because we've had some powerhouses of knowledge, some really great guests, primarily focusing on growing an audience, building a following, and making money on social media. Now, part of the conversations that we've been having have been, okay, you have this audience, you have these followers, now what? What do you do with them? How do you turn them into customers? And almost every single person, I don't care if it's Marketing Harry or Modern Millie or Maya Nicole or Emily Cooper, or anyone who we've talked to so far, they've almost all mentioned an email list and the importance of an email list and how valuable an email list is and how, regardless of how many followers you have, you should be building an email list. And that's why today, I'm so excited to bring on an actual email marketing expert onto the show. Now, before I get into introducing her or before we get into the actual interview, I do want to let you know that Stan actually has the capability to collect emails for you right in your Stan store, and then you can even send them emails directly set up from within Stan. So if you're looking for an easy all-in-one platform, maybe you're already a Stan user, I would highly recommend checking out Stan's capabilities for email marketing. But today, we're going to get into what are the best practices. We're going to get into how long should the email be, how frequently should you send an email, how long should your subject line be, when should you start building an email list, like do you have to wait till you're at 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 followers, should you be selling in every single email. All of those questions will be answered today by none other than Liz Wilcox. And yes, that's the same Liz Wilcox from season 46 of Survivor, which I won't spoil, and in fact, I actually haven't even watched it myself, so don't spoil it for me. But Liz is on the show. She has called herself the queen of cringe so far in that season. Highly recommend checking that out if you're looking for maybe a TV show to watch this evening. But before we get into that, of course, let's learn something. Let's get some value. Let's make our business lives better by listening to this conversation that I had with Liz. Truly so much knowledge, so many practical insights that you can take away from today's episode. I know myself personally, I was taking notes. I actually have quite a few notes that I'm going to implement into my own email marketing based off what I learned from Liz in today's podcast. So without further ado, here's the interview. Hello, Liz. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to have you here, especially because like we were talking about off air, all of our episodes so far, we have to some degree talked about the importance of email marketing. Like all of the episodes have focused on growing your social media following, but then every single person has talked about building your email list and freemiums and opt-ins and the importance, but we haven't dove deep or dived deep into that world. So today we're going to, but I want to start with what a lot of my listeners, a lot of my followers believe and what they message me, which is email marketing dead? Like, is there any purpose for email marketing? So I would love to just kind of begin and set the groundwork for where we're headed today with giving you the microphone to basically make the argument, make the case as to why we should care about email marketing.
Sure. Not only is email marketing still alive, it is on and popping, my friends. I did the math a couple weeks ago, and for every dollar I spent with email marketing last year, I made $166 in return. Wow. So, and the average is $40 in return. So even if you're just seeing average results, you can see results. And I just love email marketing. And I love that this is a podcast about social media, because raise your hand if you were alive in 2022, right? And raise your hand if you remember when a billionaire bought a social media platform, changed its name, and lost all of its sponsors and advertising. Mm-hmm. If you had built your entire following on that social media platform, which a lot of authors, journalists, sports, and fandoms did, mm-hmm. you might be wondering, where the heck are my eyeballs? Yeah. Oh my gosh, my traffic is down, my sponsors have left me, and I'm feeling a little high and dry right now. That's why email marketing is your number one asset. Unlike social media, and I say this with love, you can own your email list, and it's consent-based. Sure, we all consent to seeing advertising on social media, but it's not very specific. With email marketing, I opt in to hear more from Brock. Brock opts in to hear more from you. It's consent-based. You own it. And that's why I can come on here and say, you know, oh, for every dollar you spend, you can get $40 in return. Email marketing is not dead. It is here to stay, baby.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I second everything that you said. And besides just the case of a billionaire buying a certain platform and then, for lack of a better word, destroying said platform and then crushing everyone's reach on the platform, like there's just so many other examples of how you could lose access to your followers. Like I think of, it was about a week ago, I think it was exactly a week ago at the time we're recording this, Instagram and Facebook shut down. Now, it was only for a couple of hours and most people got their platforms right back, but that's not always the case. I also know that I get probably 10 to 15 direct messages a day from people who have been hacked or their account has been shut down or suddenly they just can't log in or X, Y, and Z, they can't access their account. And so to your point, they can't access their followers, something that they think is theirs, right? Like we say, my followers, it's mine, I own it. But in reality, like you were saying, you don't own your list of followers. You don't own the rights to really contact them at any time like you do with your email list. So I asked this, I don't know if it was the episode before today's or two episodes ago, but would you rather have 100,000 email list subscribers or 1 million followers on whatever platform you choose? And I'll add the asterisks onto this. You can't say, well, I'll take the million followers because I'm just going to convert them all into my email list anyways. So which one would you choose?
I, of course, would have the 100,000 followers on my email list versus the million on XYZ platform. With email marketing, it's a much more intimate channel where you can have real connections. Think about the way we operate with social media. A lot of us, I know I'm a mom, and sometimes right before dinner, I get caught up, I click on Instagram or Facebook, and guess what I'm doing when I click on those platforms? I'm disassociating. I'm not there to learn. I'm not there to solve problems. I'm there to check out Brock, you know, dancing and telling me Instagram is important, and then I scroll on to the next, right? It's so much different when we click on our Gmail or our Apple Mail app. We are actively looking for a solution. We're looking for that bill we forgot to pay, that email mom sent us with the recipe, or you know that email Brock sent us with the link to join the Insta Club Hub, right? We're actively looking for solutions in our inbox. It's so much more different than social media, where we're kind of looking to be entertained, looking to check out, looking to smile. It's just a different way of interacting online, and it's a much more lucrative way for us creators to interact with our audience.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think when I asked that question the other day, I didn't add the asterisks of like, but you can't convert the followers into your email list. And so I totally agree. I think that the email list is far more valuable, even if it's, you know, a tenth of the size. So let's start with just a very simple question. What email marketing platforms do you recommend? Is there generally like a handful or a suite, or is there one specific one that you usually promote or share to your list?
Sure. So I'm kind of tech agnostic. I don't really care what you use as long as you use it. Personally, I use something called ConvertKit. It's created by creators for creators. I've been using it since 2017 and it works for my brain. But the two things I really want you to consider when you're figuring out what email service provider to choose are, number one, your brain. I already mentioned that. And number two, your budget. So I could list off a bunch. You can Google, you know, ActiveCampaign, ConvertKit, Keep, Flowdesk. I want you to just put 20 minutes on the clock. Go over to YouTube and watch some tutorials, you know, some over-the-shoulder kind of reviews, and which one makes the most sense. And then, you know, spend the last 5 minutes comparing prices. Just pick one and get going.
Yeah, I love that. Such actionable advice. And I hope everyone is taking that as homework and is actually going to set that 20-minute timer. I know that Stan, who is the producer of this podcast, they also have their own built-in email marketing system where you can collect leads and have people opt in right on your Stan store. So I know that's very useful as well. And I know a lot of people are kind of just like organically growing their email list with that feature. So when should people start building their email list? Should it be like once you hit 10,000 followers, once you hit a certain number? Because just today that we're speaking, Instagram CEO went on his little soapbox and went on his Instagram reels. And he was like, you know, if you have a small following on Instagram, which is most people, you shouldn't monetize and you shouldn't try to make sales. You should just focus on growing your audience. And a lot of people are very upset about that, rightfully so. I strongly disagree with him. But circling back to my question, when should someone start building an email list?
Yesterday, my friend, listen, because email marketing has that ROI, because, you know, it's consent-based, because you own it, we need to get started right now. And with every, I've actually owned three businesses, and with every single business, I actually launched the email list first. You don't need a large following. You don't even need a website. You just need to get on, you know, social, whatever platform you're most active, and say, hey, here's what I'm doing over here. You know, you can say, oh, I'm going to offer exclusive tips or discounts or whatever is applicable to what you're doing. You know, join me over here. This is the actual spot that is on and popping over here. Like, this is my community over here. And so launching that email list as soon as possible, just getting what Brock and I talked about, that email service provider, however you're going to get those leads, create something called a landing page where it says like, hey, join my list or get my freebie or whatever. And putting that out on your social channels as soon as possible is really, really smart. When I had my first blog, I didn't know what I was doing, but I knew I needed an email list because that's what everybody and their mother was telling me. So the day I launched my site was the day I launched my email list. And I said, hey, I'm going to be putting out new blog posts, et cetera, et cetera. Join the list. That way you'll be the first to be notified. And honestly, that was enough to get me my first 15 or 20 subscribers in the first couple of days. And what happens when you get those first subscribers, and you likely know this when you start a social account, is you gain a little confidence. You gain some momentum, like, okay, this is a real thing. I'm going to keep going. And that's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking kind of an analogy while you were speaking, which is comparing, you know, this digital world that we live in and that we're talking about to like a storefront, right? And I kind of think of the email list almost like a cash register. Like, a lot of people might think like, oh no, I need followers first and then I'll create my email list. And I would compare that to being like, well, I'm going to put out the clothes and I'm going to open the doors for customers to come into my boutique, but I'm not going to have a cash register. Like, there's nothing for them to do from there. And so absolutely, I agree that like day one, before you even start building your following or your social media, start building that email list. But let's say that someone's taking our advice and either they've listened to the previous episodes and they started an email list, or they're listening today and as we're speaking, they're like pulling up a side browser. So let's get into some like best practices of email marketing. And my first question is related to email frequency. And I would assume, I'm not deeply engrossed in the world of email marketing. I'm deeply engrossed in the world of Instagram marketing. And I know that in Instagram, post frequency is very highly debated. Like, how much should you post? How much is too much? How much is annoying your audience? And there's a lot of different opinions in that answer. So I would love to hear from you when it comes to email marketing. What frequency do you generally recommend for, let's say, just an average email list, like a newsletter list?
Yeah. So listen, in the words of Luther Vandross, never too much, baby, never too much. But I know that can be really intimidating. The same way when you first found Brock and he's talking about three times a day, that might have been, oh my gosh, cringe. I'm breaking out in hives for you. And so I don't want you to just, you know, go 0 to 100 real quick. Like, we're not Drake here, okay? And so what I want you to think about with what Brock is saying, like the typical newsletter, is just try for once a week. That's a typical, really good cadence. And why I say once a week is because, just like on Instagram and other social medias, you have to stay top of mind. People are actively looking for your solution. And if you are top of mind when they say, yep, now's the time to solve this problem, you're going to be the one that wins. And so just like going to the gym or just like trying to go up to, you know, 3 Instagram reels a day, you don't just start right there, right? You got to go in, get on the treadmill for 5 minutes, come back the next day, do it 6 minutes, 7 minutes, right? And so with email, just start building that list. Maybe you commit to once a month, and then a month or two goes by, you say, okay, that's not bad. Then go to twice a month, but really keep that goal in mind of once a week, because that's really going to help keep you top of mind. It's going to help you show that you are invested in your readers. And guess what? Brock and I will tell you, you heard it here first. No one is going to invest into you and your products and services if they don't first know that you are invested in them. So think of that goal of not just, oh, I got to write a weekly newsletter because Liz told me to. It's, I have to write a weekly newsletter so my people know I'm invested in them, right? And then it helps you become relatable too. You stay in that inbox. They know, oh, Liz, that's the girl with the silly headbands and the NSYNC thing. And I just love her because she's so herself. That's so relatable with the 90s stuff, right? And so again, that weekly newsletter helps you show you're invested. It helps you become relatable. And it definitely keeps you top of mind to your customers.
Awesome. So that all makes sense to me. And I was really curious to hear your answer because we recently within our business, within the Insta Club Hub, brought in an email marketing expert. And one of the things that we learned from our conversation with them is that we should basically take this almost, for lack of a better word, aggressive strategy where when we have a new lead and someone who's actually like become a trialer, someone who's in an active part of our trial, we're emailing them, I believe, once a day. I don't think quite more than once a day, but at least once a day. And as long as they're continuing to click on the emails or open them, we're continuing to email them every single day, essentially. And so I'm curious, I know you said, you know, the more the merrier, there's never enough. Is that something that you would recommend or something that you have any experience with yourself in the past?
What I love about what Brock's email marketer is telling him is the daily emails are absolutely essential for him and his business because he has a proven product. They know how it works. They know what makes it sell and why people don't buy. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of content behind the Insta Club Hub to have that daily practice. And there's a lot of authority there. And at the end of the day, we say it with love, but you're either in or you're out, right? Yeah. And when you have a business of that size, you know, it's okay to, you know, quote unquote, lose those subscribers. They'll come back when they're ready, especially with those daily emails. They know what it is, what it's not. And when they're ready for it, they'll come back.
Yeah.
But when you're first starting out with email, that can be really nerve-wracking. And also, you might not know what sells your product and what doesn't. And so that weekly cadence will, number one, help you feel more comfortable. Number two, give you just enough wiggle room, but structure at the same time to start to understand your subscribers, to say, oh yeah, they're clicking on this. Oh, they didn't click on that. Oh, this subject line did amazingly well. Oh, that one was kind of a doozy. Nothing happened over here. And so over time, about 6 months, you'll start to gather that data. And if and when you feel comfortable, I definitely suggest, you know, sending out 1, 2, maybe 3 newsletters a week, depending on what you have to say. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. In fact, when you're leading up to a big launch, maybe something like Black Friday, something I experimented in 2023 was I sent daily newsletters for the last 90 days of the year, and I almost doubled my income.
Wow.
So it's definitely something you can lead up to, especially when you know with certainty, the way Brock and his email marketing friend know, like, this is what sells, this is what doesn't, you know, let's accelerate, let's be aggressive. I love that so much.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear that. That's affirming for us and our team. And I want to circle back now because you were talking about like your love for the 90s, and I can see the NSYNC poster behind you. And, you know, you mentioned that yourself. But to me, what that screams is like knowing yourself and your voice, and the way you're going to come across in, I'm guessing, even like your emails and your copywriting. So do you have any tips for figuring that sort of thing out? Because I would imagine people are often intimidated by the idea of like, what do I write? Like, how do I sound like myself? How do I go about typing an email that's going to go out to maybe 30 or 100 or a couple thousand people at once?
You don't have to be Liz Wilcox Loud to have a personality, right? Some people are repelled. They come to my Instagram or they join my email list and they're like, oh, too much. Luther Vandross was wrong. This is too much. And that's okay. When, especially with email, you want to share personality, but this doesn't mean that you have to, you know, be super vulnerable and share everything with your email list. I teach something called the email staircase. First, you have a follower, then you have a friend, then you have a customer. And when we talk about friendships in the inbox, it's just that surface level personality. And not that you're being fake, but just, you know, just scratching the surface, just starting the friendship, right? For example, you know, we already mentioned it. I love NSYNC. That's a big part of my brand. It's a big part of my personality, but it doesn't actually tell you anything about Liz other than, you know, she's stuck in 1999, right? And so you can be yourself in these emails. You can share a little personality without having to, like a lot of other email marketers will tell you, tell these long stories and like pull from your childhood or, you know, these circumstances that are happening to you. Just surface level personality. Even, you know, what beverages do you drink? What shows do you like to watch? Brock, before we hit record, said, oh, we're trying to get through the Love is Blind season finale and then we'll figure something else out, right? That doesn't actually tell me anything about Brock and his wife, but it gives me a little piece of them, right? It's that surface level personality. And you can definitely put those in your emails to become relatable.
Got it. Speaking of length, that's another thing that I would love to talk about, because again, I'm making so many like in my brain comparisons between like Instagram marketing and email marketing, besides just how much should you post on Instagram. Another very common question is, how long should my posts be? How long should my reels be? How long should my captions be? And I'm going to assume you don't have like a one size fits all, 256 characters is how long should your email should be. Maybe you do, I don't know, but I would love to just know some best practices of what you would recommend in terms of email length.
Yeah, so I do have a general rule of thumb. I'm kind of an organized lady. You wouldn't tell by the way I dress, but I'm very organized, kind of, you know, type A. Anyway, I would say about 400 words is a good, decent length without getting too wordy or being too short. But here's what I really want you to know about email. The inbox is the exact same as the mailbox. We go out to the mailbox. Oh, there's a bill. Oh, you know, that's for Sadie. She moved out 3 years ago. Why are they still sending me this? Oh, Brock sent me something. I'm going to open it right away. I wonder what's inside. We do the exact same thing in our inbox. Oh, that's a bill. I know that's on auto pay archive. Oh, that's junk. Marcus spam. Oh, Liz sent me something. I wonder what she has to say today. I'm going to open it right away. And so with your emails, depending length, content, whatever, what I want you to know is you want to be familiar. Oh my gosh, that's Brock. But we don't want to be predictable. Oh, I know what he's sending me, right? If Brock sent me the same package the first week, oh my gosh, what'd he send me? The second week, oh, that's weird. I got that last week. The third week, oh, I know what's inside that. I'm going to open it later when the kids go to bed. It's the same with the inbox. We want to vary our content. So maybe one day it's 400 words. Maybe the next day it's 100 words. Maybe the next day it's, you know, a soliloquy. It's very long and it's got a story and three calls to action. You want to be familiar. Oh, I know who that is. But we don't want to be so predictable that people think they know what's inside. It goes to page two and it's forever unopened.
Okay, so I would love to then dive into this topic around like, what do you actually put in your emails? Because I think a lot of people hear email marketing and they think marketing equals selling. And so it's just really email selling. So what do you put in your emails besides just sales copyright?
Yeah. So remember what I said at the top of the hour, we want to show that we are invested in our subscriber. We want to become relatable and we want to stay top of mind, right? So within your content, showing you're invested by things like hey, I just listened to this podcast episode. Here are the three things I learned, right? Sharing that you listened to the podcast episode that's within your industry shows you're invested in the topic, right? Even saying something like, I bought a new camera so I can have better YouTube videos. That shows you are invested. Also, how are you invested in the vision you have for your potential clients and students, right? My vision for you, you make money with email marketing. I don't care about anything else. No offense. I don't care about your social media. I don't care about your podcast. All I care about is that your list is monetized. So sharing how I'm invested so that we can get closer to that finish line is really, really important. Also, that relatability piece, right? Oh, my refrigerator broke. In the middle of a recording a podcast episode, my internet went down. What's more relatable than that, right? I was recording and my dogs walked in, right? Sharing things, little tidbits like that of life really help you just have something to write, number one, and help you connect with your audience. You might think, oh, my audience doesn't care. I've got to tell these big, long stories. But just like Brock teaches you, like with your Instagram reels, they can be, you know, some B-roll with some content over it or something silly. You can have bedhead and a dirty sweater. It doesn't have to be perfect. That's what actually connects you to your audience. It's the same in the inbox. So sharing things like that is really good. And I think, can I share my 20-minute newsletter framework? Is that okay? Cool. So I always say, like, if it takes more than 20 minutes, you're doing it wrong. So really what you want to do is just greet them, share a personal update. And those were all the little suggestions I gave you. And don't try to tell stories. Don't try to be interesting. Leave that for celebrities. Just be relatable, right? And the personal update is just 2 to 3 sentences about something you've done since the last time you emailed them. Took my dogs for a walk, recorded a podcast, picked up my kid from school, bought a new NSYNC poster, right? Whatever, right? And then segue into the content that you really have to share, whether you're a podcast host, so you've got a new episode, you do YouTube and you're just starting out and you want some subscribers over there. You found a TikTok that you found hilarious and you want to share with your audience, right? It can be anything. Or, you know, hey, I've got 2 spots open for my audits this week. Click over here, right? So you can sell or you can, you know, share other free links, or maybe it's just a couple tips that you learned from a podcast, whatever. And then get out of there. So again, it's just greeting, personal update, segue into the content. And if you say, oh, Liz, I'm not a copywriter. I don't know how to segue from going talking about my dogs to sharing my new blog post. Here is the key. And I promise, like, I know you're driving or you're doing the dishes right now. Like, you don't even have to write this down. It's super simple. Click that caps lock button, type in the word anyway, dot, dot, dot. What I really wanted to tell you was my new blog post, this Instagram reel I have to share. I've got 2 spots. Seriously. Anyway, dot, dot, dot. What I really need to share this week is blah, blah, blah. It's really, really simple.
I love that. That's so actionable. Like, that's so easy. And again, it's just my nature. Everything you're talking about is relating back to social. So when I'm thinking about social, there's like 4 kinds of content or 4 categories of content that our posts usually fall into. It's relatable content. It's content that is like educational or shares some tips or some value. And those 2 things I feel like you just basically hit on within emails. There's 2 other kinds of content that I've legitimately just been thinking about even outside of this conversation today and wondering if there is a place for them within email marketing. And they are share-worthy content. So the type of thing that is just like a super funny meme, or it is like breaking news on Instagram that everyone needs to know about. It comes in many different forms, but just the type of content that you screenshot and you send to a friend, or you like share it in a group chat. So let's start with that kind of content. Do you see very many people using that? Is that a thing? Is that worth your time in email marketing, or is that not really worth it?
It's absolutely worth it. It's like when you go to the bowling alley and they don't let you bring in your own pizza. You don't really like to go to that bowling alley anymore, right? You don't want to be the guy that's only sending your own content within email, right? It goes back to showing that you are invested in them and you are invested in your industry by sharing what Brock is talking about, other people's content that's share-worthy. Oh, I saw this TikTok. It made me laugh. You're going to love it. or, oh my gosh, you'll never guess this article. I couldn't believe tip number three. I think everybody needs this, right? So definitely sharing, you know, other people's content. You know, I'm down with that. I love that so much. And it's definitely an underutilized strategy, especially, and I'm sure you guys, you know, you're listening, you have to come up with a bunch of social media content ideas to add on to an email marketing content idea is so rough. I get it. And so just finding other people's content to share is going to take that load off and show that you are an expert in your industry because you're actively searching for the same things they are, and you're the one curating that content and giving it to them.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I feel validated. That was something that I wanted to start doing with my own email list. So something I will definitely start doing. And then the fourth, to circle back to my previous question, the fourth kind of content is content that just generally sparks conversation, whether it's asking people for their feedback or it's content that can be controversial sometimes. But this is something that I do kind of regularly within my email list. And I feel like it fits for me and who I am. But anyways, I sent an email to my list. I have it pulled up here. I sent it last week and I said, hey, I just wanted to pop in your email or pop in your inbox to see how your first few months of 2024 have been in business and social media. What you're struggling with these days? Do you have any wins you want to share? I'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to reply directly to this email. That was the whole email, and I've received well over 100 replies and responses in my inbox. But I want to ask, like, is that common? Is that worth it? Or is that just going to crowd up my inbox and it will hurt my future emails because everyone else is going to be annoyed by this sort of email? Like, what are your thoughts, your raw response to that?
This might be my favorite question ever asked. And I've done 3 podcasts today. No joke.
Wow.
Yeah. This is so exciting. I love getting replies to emails, I don't care how large your audience is invaluable. That's called, number one, that's called first party data. And it is more accurate than looking at your open rate, looking at your click rate. You know, tech is going to be tech-in, but first party data, someone telling you, this is what I'm struggling with. This was my win this week. Like, that's the most accurate thing you can ever have. And so getting replies to your emails, especially when you're first starting out, or if you're really struggling, you launched and nothing really worked, go back to getting those replies. And Brock has a very established audience. So he got those 100 replies because he has that. If you're just starting out with your email list and you sent something like that, you're probably going to get 0 replies because those are very open-ended questions. You want to ask close-ended questions. Have you sent out a weekly newsletter? Hit reply, yes or no. I really want to know, right? Brock might send, have you posted an Instagram reel in the last 7 days? That I would bet he would get over 1,000 replies.
I'm writing that down.
Ask that question.
I'm sending that out next week.
Very yes or no questions. And not only does it help you gather the data, if he got a bunch of no's, Brock's got a lot of work to do, right? How do I get these people to take action? If he gets a bunch of yeses, oh, maybe in the next email, I can sell my membership, right? Because he knows they are ready. And so within my emails, what I really recommend to start gathering this data and start creating and cultivating that community, because that's truly what he's doing, is within your welcome sequence, the very first email you ever send, that welcome email that delivers the freebie or the coupon or whatever, P.S., yes or no question. Liz, she asks, you know, do you write a weekly newsletter? Hit reply, yes or no. Now I'm in business. No, but I really want to. Oh my gosh, don't worry about it. You know, I've got this $9 a month membership. Check it out here. No pressure, but when you're ready, I'm here for you. If they say yes, oh my gosh, I congratulate them. I send them a silly GIF of myself saying yay or something like that. We are off to the races, right? So that reply system, I don't care how big you are, it helps you stay connected with your audience. It helps you understand where your audience is at so you can craft your messaging, your offers, and your positioning to help them get to their next right step.
Well, awesome. I'm glad I sent that out and I'm going to keep doing that then. You just briefly mentioned sending like a GIF in an email. So what are your thoughts generally around like, should you include GIFs? Should you include photos? Lots of photos, only a few photos? Does it depend on the brand? I don't know if it's always the case, but I've noticed a lot of times with like big companies when I get an email from them, like REI, for example, when I get an email from them, the entire email, it looks like is like a graphic that was designed like in Canva or something. And it's like, there's no actual text in the actual email. It's just all like a JPEG. So what are your thoughts around that and everything else I already asked?
Yeah. So the bigger the brand, like Brock said, you know, usually the more formatted and beautiful and kind of pristine, like, it looks like this long infographic from Canva. It's like, what are they even doing? Remember, emails, no matter if you're B2B or B2C, like we're all H2H, we're all human to human. So what does your human want to see, right? We don't want to see this big, long graphic. That screams giant business, right? That screams, they're paying someone and nobody's even looking at what they're sending out. And so within your brand, going back to that brand personality, what's in your personality to send out and what could be relatable or, you know, help this customer journey along? For example, I make my own GIFs. If I'm going to use a GIF because I love them, it's going to have my face on them because I am the brand. And so I make my own. But you don't have to. Like, what are some shows or some, you know, talents that you like, right? Like if I wasn't using my face, maybe I'd use NSYNC or Seinfeld or Trolls, right? Because people associate those things with me. So those are the types of GIFs I'm using. Now, from a deliverability standpoint, you also don't want to do what Brock just said about having one giant JPEG. That is a, you know, that's a double red flag on the 50-yard line right there. We don't want to do that. The internet gods don't like that. But having one picture, a GIF here or there, really think about it, all things in moderation. And so every few emails, you know, putting an image or, you know, a GIF in there is great, but you don't want to do too many because those do throw up deliverability red flags.
Gotcha. What are some other red flags that we should avoid that might get our email automatically sent to the depths of spam and never to be opened or read?
Really, those images are a really big one. Not having alt text. So if I had an image, not creating a title is a bit of a yellow flag. It's like, hey, you know, maybe you just put it in there. Maybe this is spam because it's just kind of thrown together. But really, I focus less on the red flags because when you do email marketing right, there's so many green flags that the internet gods will allow you some red flags. For example, getting those replies. Brock just said he's got 100 replies. That's 100 green flags, which is worth, I'd say, 1,000 red flags. So Brock could put, you know, red flags are typically don't put the word free in a subject line. Don't say the word COVID in the body text of your emails during 2020. Those were red flags. But because he's worked so hard gathering that first party data, because he's emailing consistently, because he has nurture sequences, because people are clicking and buying, the green flags always outweigh the red flags. So I don't want to tell you, don't do this and don't do that and don't do this. Really, it's the things you do that make all the difference.
Gotcha. Okay, good to know. And you brought up subject lines. So let's dive into that for a quick second. One of the email service providers that I've used in the past, when I've gone to type in my subject line, it'll pop up little, I don't want to call them warnings, but notices if I do certain things. So I know two of the things off the top of my head that it warns me about is don't use more than 50 characters in my subject line and avoid making, I think it says like the majority or more than 50% of my subject line in all caps, which is a struggle for me, sidebar, because I'm an all caps person. So oftentimes I just write things in all caps and then it's like, whoa, 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 maybe don't do that. So are those two things valid? And do you have anything else that you might add on as a best practice for subject lines?
Yeah, it's the same as what I said earlier, like just vary what you're doing. You know, if he wants to do an all caps, let him do an all caps to where with that warning sign. If that's in Brock's personality and his audience knows he's an all caps guy, then he can do whatever he wants, right? Because he's doing all the things correctly and people are going to open it anyway. And likely if it goes to junk, hey, where's that email from Brock? I usually get them on Tuesdays. They're going to go to their spam and probably find it and open it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But of course, as you're starting out, you do want to tend to avoid those types of things, but just vary your subject lines. Sure, you want to keep them short. Like Brock said, the 50 characters, I usually think like 3 to 5 words is good. 6 to 8 is okay. Mm. Anything more than 8, remember, I think it's something like 80% of emails are opened on your mobile device. So they're not even going to see past those 5 words anyway. Yeah. So you might as well just figure out those 50 characters, like Brock said. Gotcha. And so with the subject line, again, just varying it and think of it. Remember, we're following the email staircase, follower, friend, customer. If I was just sending this to my friend, what would the subject line be, right? If I was just sending to Brock, saw this on Facebook and thought of you, right? If we're sending an article, you won't believe what she said. Finally recorded this podcast, you know, things like that. Or even, you know, open this today, right? If the sale ends tomorrow, right? What would I actually send my friend? Put that in the subject line, just hit send.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. This is all very useful and very practical. I know you also have a freebie. Can you tell us a little bit about that freebie?
Sure. So we didn't get too far into it. Email marketing is this like magical wonderland of things I could talk about all day. But really the number one thing I want you to do and walk away and start with email is that welcome sequence. When someone joins your list, what are you saying to them? You don't know, but I do. You can go directly to LizWilcox.com. There's a hot pink button in the top right-hand corner. It's going to give you a welcome sequence already written for you to guide those followers into friends, into customers. You're also going to get 3 newsletters that teach you how to get people to click, how to get people to reply, which we talked a lot about, and how to get people to buy directly from your newsletter. And if that's not enough, I know writing from scratch, it totally sucks. I've got 52 subject lines for a year full of prompts, all for free, LizWilcox.com, hot pink button.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to go click that hot pink button myself because I want to definitely get all of those freebies and all that good stuff. So thank you so much for that. Any parting words of wisdom or advice or motivation or cheesy quotes that you want to share before we sign off today?
Sure. When I am thinking about email and really any decision, you know, from there, I always ask myself 2 questions, and this helps me take the next right step. So the next time you think about your email marketing, I just want to ask you 2 questions. Number 1, what would this look like if it was easy? And number 2, what would this look like if it was fun? And between those 2, you're going to figure out what to do next.
I love that. That is so awesome. Thank you for that. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to think about those things myself. And I just want to say again, thank you so much for being on the show today. So, so, so much value. We will link up your freebies down in the show notes below. But Liz, thank you for your time.
Thank you. This was so fun. I can't wait to see what you do with email.
Awesome. Thank you so much for listening today. As we said in the podcast, set a 20-minute timer so that you can pick what email list provider you're going to use, and then set another 20-minute timer to write your first welcome email. But before you do, I would probably recommend heading to Liz's website, clicking on the big pink button so you can download her freebies for a little bit of extra help there. Thank you so much for listening today. And as I've mentioned in a previous podcast, the absolute best way that you can show your love and support for this podcast is to, 1, download the episode that you just listened to. If you haven't already, make sure that you are subscribed to the podcast in general. That way, future episodes are automatically downloaded and ready for you to listen. And if you really want to make my day and maybe even be my favorite follower of the week, take a screenshot of today's episode, post it on your Instagram stories, and tag myself and Liz with at least 1 thing you learned in today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.